So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 12, verses 7 to 11. Sometimes Krishna would go to a somewhat distant place to see the beauty of the forest. Then all the other boys would run to accompany him, each one saying, "I shall be the first to run and touch Krishna. I shall touch Krishna first." And in this way they enjoyed life by repeatedly touching Krishna. There's no purport to this, so I'll go on to the next verse. Translation of the next verse is, all the boys would be differently engaged. Some boys blew their flutes and others blew bugles made of horn. Some imitated the buzzing of the bumblebees and others imitated the voice of the cuckoo. Some boys imitated flying birds by running after the birds' shadows on the ground, and some imitated the beautiful movements and attractive postures of the swans. Some sat down with the ducks sitting silently, and others imitated the dancing of the peacocks. Some boys attracted young monkeys in the trees, and some jumped into the trees, imitating the monkeys. Some made faces as the monkeys were accustomed to do, and others jumped from one branch to another. Some boys went into the waterfall and crossed over the river, jumping into the frogs, and when they saw their own reflection in the water, they would laugh. They would also condemn the sounds of their own echoes. And in this way, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of all the Brahman effulgence, for jnanis desiring to merge into the effulgence, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the devotees who have accepted eternal servitorship, and for who the ordinary persons is only but an ordinary child. The cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives, were able to associate in this way with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one explain their great fortune? Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. As recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami, Tasmat Genapi Upayana Mana Krishna Nivishyat. Somehow or another, the source of the Brahman effulgence, as the original Paramatma, or as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should concentrate one's full attention upon the lotus feet of Krishna. That is also the instruction in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verse 66, Sarva Dharma Parityajan Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Srimad Bhagavatam is the easiest way of directly approaching Krishna. Ishwarya Sadhya Hridaya Avaradyate Trata Kritabi Shushrubis Tat Shanat. Diverting even a little of one's attention towards Krishna and his activities in Krishna consciousness immediately enables us to achieve the highest perfection of life. This is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. The secret of success is unknown to people in general. Therefore, Srila Vyasadev, being compassionate towards the poor souls in this material world, especially at this age of Kali, has given us the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam Purana Mala Yad Vaishnavam Nam Priya. For Vaishnavas who are somewhat advanced or are able fully to, are fully aware of the glories and potencies of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam is the beloved Vedic scripture literature. After all, we have to change this body. Tatha dehantra praptir. If we do not care about Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, we do not know what our next body will be. But if one adheres to these two books, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, one is sure to obtain the association of Krishna in the next life. Tyaktva deham punarjanma neti mam etiso Arjuna. Therefore, distribution of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world is a great welfare activity for theologians, philosophers, transcendentalists, and yogis, as well as for the people in general. Janma lab parapumsa ante Narayana smriti. If one can somehow or another remember Krishna Narayan at the end of his life, our life will be successful. What I really love about Srila Prabhupada's purport is that he gives us three very crystal clear instructions within this text. And that is, the first crystal clear instruction he gives us is that he cites Rupa Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami. And Srila Rupa Goswami is saying, concentrate on the lotus feet of the Lord. The second aspect that Srila Prabhupada gives us and backs it up from what Lord Krishna is saying is the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita 18:66, the final instruction, that surrender unto me, give up, abandon all varieties of religion, do not fear, I am your dear friend. It's interesting how the Lord uses the word do not fear. And then the third instruction Srila Prabhupada gives us and backs it up through the Srimad Bhagavatam is that he says it's the most easiest way. Srimad Bhagavatam is the easiest way of directly approaching the Lord. And diverting even a little of one's attention towards Krishna enables us to achieve the perfection of life. This is the purpose of Krishna consciousness movement. How wonderful that Srila Prabhupada gets straight to the point, and not just once, not twice, but three times. What I love about Srila Prabhupada is, and I'm sure that you all do, is that he's very crystal clear. He gets to the point. And often we call that Prabhupada's elevator, straight to the top, straight to the point, no ambiguity, no duality. So here, very clearly, the Lord, Srila Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami is saying, concentrate on the lotus feet of the Lord, surrender to the Lord. This chapter, interesting enough, is called the Summum Bonum. So what is the Summum Bonum? The dictionary definition is that it's for our highest good, especially the ultimate goal, according to which values and priorities are established in an ethical system. So why are Krishna's pastimes for our highest good? Didn't Srila Prabhupada mention to us about not jumping into Krishna's pastimes too quickly, because the danger of that is the sahajya mentality that we ourselves begin to concoct, or the mind begins to concoct, that here I am, I'm visualizing and I'm enjoying with Krishna. So what we are entering into is the most confidential knowledge. We know that confident knowledge or Vedic knowledge is divided into three parts. There's confidential knowledge, more confidential knowledge, and the most confidential knowledge. So as we're entering into this, the stories are not just Lord Krishna and the children frolicking, and for the mundane intelligence, they will see it like that. But from a spiritual intelligence, no. And in the wrong hands, this most confidential aspect or pastimes of the Lord can be used as a stereotype or propaganda, as I understood as a teacher maybe 18 years ago teaching RE in the classroom. And in the old days, sometimes we'd have those BBC programs and you put the cassette in, and within the Christianity, the teachings was the Good Samaritan. Everybody gets that, you know, be kind, be nice. And then within Islam, it was give charity. Great, children will understand that. And then within Hinduism, put the video on, and it was Lord Krishna frolicking with half-naked gopis. It's very, very dangerous, because what are the messages we are giving children and teachers about what are the values of Hinduism? So Srila Prabhupada warns us as well that, you know, we have to have a level of sincerity, humility, to be able to approach these stories and not see them as just, oh, well, it's just children having fun. So what are the teachings teaching us? What's the most critical aspect of experiencing who we are? Because of the nature of the soul is Sachidananda Vigraha. That is, that we are eternal, we are all-knowing, we are blissful. And what comes with that is pure goodness, joy, happiness, kindness, compassion. That's what the soul is. What it isn't is the demoniac qualities and anarthas and the impediments that we collect along the way, lifetime after lifetime. So why is the Srimad Bhagavatam the most direct way of approaching Lord Krishna? Well, the secret lies in having compassion. Lord Krishna, Srila Vyasadeva, Sri Advaita Acharya, they all prayed. Well, Sri Advaita Acharya prayed for the descent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How can somebody have love for somebody else that they don't even know? And this is what this movement is about, that really our highest compassion, the highest welfare activity is that people really know and understand who they are in their intrinsic state. And that is, at the soul level, you are all good. You are all wonderful. You are all worthy. And the Lord wants us to know this. And he wants the whole point of this scripture, and we come to the painstaking trouble that Srila Prabhupada took to translating these books, is that he wants us to realize our eternal loveliness. The problem is we've forgotten who we really are and who others are in our association. And so often we're driven by fear and illusion. The anarthas cover us. And because of fear and illusion and our own difficulties in actually processing the truth, we interpret life, and then as a result, the end product is lust, anger, greed, and fear. I wanted to read something to you from the inner meanings and the pastimes of Lord Krishna's, Lord Krishna's childhood pastimes and the anarthas and the impediments that we must remove. So, up till now, if we've been reading the different texts like Shish Upanishad, even Bhagavad Gita, all the key texts until we come to Srimad Bhagavatam, it's all about knowing the outside world, knowing who we are, where we stand, and our relationship to the outside world. But as we're going more into the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're going more internally within our own selves. And as a result, this is a list, the list of obstacles or anarthas in the Vrajabhajana, which are indicated to be the inner meanings of the pastimes of Lord Krishna, come from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Chaitanya Shikshashtam. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling us that the demons manifesting in Vrajagokula on earth have symbolic significance. They're not found in the spiritual world. They appear as rumors or impressions, not actual threats of the pastimes. The demons killed by Krishna in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam represent our anarthas, the impurities and obstacles preventing a devotee from attaining pure love of Krishna, of Radha Krishna. These undesirable impurities and demonic qualities must be completely uprooted from the core of one's heart, 100%. Pure devotees of Krishna can then live eternally in Vrindavan, blissfully serving the divine couple. If a devotee cries out humbly and sincerely to Lord Krishna to remove these demonic qualities, which are represented by the demons killed by Lord Krishna, then Krishna himself will come to remove these evils. But a devotee must personally drive out these anarthas represented by the demons. This is the mystery of the Vraja Bhajana. So I'm going to repeat that again. So to actually really to be able to go back to Godhead, to be able to really relish these pastimes, a devotee must work personally to drive out the anarthas represented by the demons. And then Krishna will be merciful to us in all cases. And in this case, the feeling that will arise within the mind will be quickly destroyed, and these demonic from these demonic qualities, and one will gradually improve the cultivation of bhajana, meaning hearing, chanting, meditating, pastimes of Lord Krishna. So what this Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying is that, you know, strive to work within your own self, seeing your own faults. It's interesting, we always often end up seeing other people's faults or difficulties or challenges. But rather than going into the blame game, how about we think about, you know, what's my role in this? What's my anartha? What's emerging for me? What I really love about Lord Krishna's instruction at the end of the Bhagavad Gita is, surrender unto me, do not fear. Now, I don't know about you, but I've always had a fearful existence. You know, what if I don't do my dharma right? What if I don't do this right? What if I'm not a good head teacher? What if I'm not a good mom? You know, the these doubts are always creeping up within us. What if I'm not a good devotee? What if I won't be able to ever chant so well? So really the truth is that fear is this preposterous and fatalistic story that your mind is always telling you, but it rarely ever shows up. How does it show up? I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. What if I'm not good enough? Maybe I won't have enough. If you're a grihastha, you'll know that one all the time. You know, have I got enough? Will I be able to pay the bills? And it's really this fear of loss. And this fear of loss comes from envy. Envy, thinking that I own everything, but actually I don't own anything. And I suppose the fear and envy are almost like two soulmates. Within envy is, I want something that somebody else has got. And we're here because of our ultimate envy towards Lord Krishna. We know the Ishvashya principle, that everything is owned and controlled by the Lord. So suppose somehow we can just surrender that whatever shows up in our life is meant to be perfectly as it's meant to be. Even the people, even the experiences. So how can I find out who I really am? How can I overcome lust, greed, anger, envy? By noticing what's going on within our anarthas. And Srila Prabhupada says the secret of serving the Lord Krishna, or overcoming the modes. We know that we are driven by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Sometimes we don't even realize, you know, how we're going to be triggered in our own behavior in our lives. But Srila Prabhupada says the secret is the modes cannot be cut down. You know, sometimes we think, I'm going to really control myself. I'm going to be really good today. I'm not going to get cross about anything. I'm not going to get upset. And then something happens and you get triggered. And you think, I had no control of that. And that's the modes, really. We don't have a lot of control over it because we are bound by the ropes of the modes. But Srila Prabhupada says there's a secret to overcome that. In a 1968 lecture he gave in New York, he said the secret of overcoming the modes is by diverting in devotional service, bhakti yoga. And how does one do that? Through humility. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells us, Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishuna amanina amanadena ketana sadhari. And actually sometimes we can just recite it off parrot fashion after a while, but the meaning doesn't feel, we don't feel it within our gut. And one of the most wonderful quotes that I found about Srila Prabhupada explaining humility is that he says, this is Srila Prabhupada's words, I am convinced beyond any doubt there is nothing in this world, absolutely nothing, not my money, not my family, not my fame, not my education, nothing can save me except the mercy of Krishna. When I'm convinced about that, then I am humble. So it's us, really. You know, it's our own journey with the Lord. That's the bottom line. You know, sometimes we look to the outside. We look at, you know, if I'm really good at this, if I wear this, if I have this qualification, if I have this job, then I'll be more lovable, I'll be loved. And it's the false ego, isn't it? The false ego is emerging. But true humility isn't stupidity either. And I think for us as devotees, it's a very important understanding that we must be able to embed in our own lives. How can we speak our truth without being aggressive? You know, humility is really, really important. It's a really important subject matter. But out of fear, we can often do things and compromise our morals and principles. So fear is a big issue, but our attitude is everything. How do we overcome our undesirable impurities, our demonic qualities or anartha? The Lord tells us, you know, go inward, Srila Prabhupada encourages us, Srila Rupa Goswami, prayer, sincerity, reflection, resilience, and not to get trapped by our stories. The beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadev talks about that, you know, all difficulties and problems occur because of social intercourse. That is, that as soon as we start engaging with other people, relationships is the secret. It's the most fundamental aspect of our progress or growth. And in every relationship, there is deep down within us a desire to be loved, to be accepted, to be wanted. And often we get tied down on our stories of unrequited love. I was abandoned. I wasn't loved. I was mistreated. And then I came to the movement, and then somebody else mistreated me. And so then our story, our victim story, continues. And the secret is actually that when we actually recognize that this material world is full of sufferings, and when our modes and our senses are engaging with the world from a sense of false ego, from a sense of fear, then our experience will always be suffering and difficulty. So how can our suffering be the palace of possibilities? How can we become better and not bitter? Anybody know? Or do we just stuff down what happens to us? You know, difficult experiences. It's like, right, all right, I'll be humble, I'll be tolerant, you know, and we stuff it down. And then one day something happens and you erupt. It erupts, or a situation happens and you remember 30 years ago that person did that to me. How do we do that? How do we overcome it? Srila Prabhupada gives us the ultimate. He says, chant, or even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jiva Doya Harinam Sadhu Sangha. Absolutely. It gives us the complete principles. But in between, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur Prabhu says, he says that we have to do the work. So the first thing is, remember, we don't own anything, and therefore there's no fear of loss. Letting go of control and depending on the Lord. It's a tough one. I know when I was working, if you're working in leadership or in any situation, you know that if there's a task you have to do, you have to deliver it. And if you don't deliver it, you're going to be in trouble. You know, the boards, you know, the directors on the board panel, they're going to shred you up. So how can I do my duty and then surrender the outcome to Krishna? Well, I think we have to be prepared for the outcome, but know that, you know, with intelligence to do what it is that we need to do and with endeavor. And that's the danger, because when we say we'll leave it to Krishna, it's okay. The Ishvashya principle, everything is owned and controlled by the Lord. Whatever will happen, will happen. But actually, we have roles and responsibilities. And that's why we have the Vanashram Dharma. You know, we have a systematic process of knowing what our duty is and what our responsibility is. The best example that I thought about of fearlessness and gratitude was Queen Kunti. She welcomes all the challenges, dear Krishna. Just let it come. Let it come, because if it doesn't come, then I'll just be too complacent and then I won't remember you. And how many of us actually welcome challenges? Because often we'll think, oh no, I really don't want to get into this. I don't want any more difficulty or trouble. But actually, the Mahabharata, Draupadi, you know, Draupadi experienced humiliation twice. First at the dice game, when she's got five husbands and she's got her family and her relatives and nobody comes to the rescue. And some people will say, well, where were those men? Where were those kshatriyas for their wife? There were five of them and they were as good as God. But suppose somehow, by their not interfering, the gem or the gift out of that was that she was the first to surrender out of the Pandavas to Lord Krishna. And then, of course, with her, after the Battle of Kurukshetra, the Pandavas leave. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes how, without even thinking about her, they leave. And that's the bottom line of the material world, that at some point we all have to leave our bodies. And the less we are attached to things and people and situations and our stories, the better we become. So how do we let go of this attachment? I think humility is really important. I've mentioned it before. But the dichotomy of humility is that sometimes you have to be humiliated to be humble. It's a very hard lesson to learn. Because we think, if you've got a good girl or good boy syndrome, I'll do everything I'm told. I'll be tolerant. I'll be this. I'll be that. But actually, the false ego is so, as Srila Prabhupada says, as the energies get finer and finer, the aspects of who we are, our false ego, it becomes more difficult for us to even trace. So the humility, the inner humility about seeing within our own heart what our real faults are rather than deluding ourselves is the secret. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Shri Shri Gonitai, Srila Prabhupada, Jai. So on the one hand, our acharyas tell us suffering, this world is full of suffering. However, we can handle suffering and suffering, I'm going to say there's something quite, for some it might feel controversial, but suffering is a choice. I know from my own personal experience, when you're attached to something and you want it to go well and you want it to go right and it doesn't go well and you have no control over other people or their choices, then suffering can come in. And the ultimate lesson of any difficulty or trauma is that we have no control over anything. And so when suffering does come, as devotees, one of the most important things we must do is handle it in a dignified way, with gratitude. And sometimes the thing that we revert to very quickly is the first offense. Not to blaspheme the devotees, let alone other people. Even if in the most difficult situations, it's just so easy to go and complain or think, this person hurt me. But how about somehow we can say, okay, this person showed up as my teacher. What is it that they're teaching me? What is it about myself? Why did this experience come to me? I wanted to just share with you about fear and difficulties when difficulties come. I think we can become even more fearful if we're not careful. If we don't use the concept of gratitude, suffering can actually perpetuate even more fear and envy. And the Sufi poet Hafiz says, "Fear is the cheapest room in the house to rent. We should raise our standards." So, how do we overcome envy and fear? Through gratitude and appreciation. If we adopt the attitude that there are no victims, there are no perpetrators, there are no rescuers, that actually, in my life, I haven't got enemies or friends. I have only teachers. Then there's a level of humility that whenever anything shows up, it's the lesson that I have to learn. What is it that I need to learn? And if we don't do that, if we don't cultivate ridding our anarthas, anger, the propensity to cheat, then as devotees, knowing what we know, I wonder what our outcome is. But knowing what we know, we have a choice. Either we choose the wrong road to hell, or we choose overcome by overcoming lust, anger, and greed, and instead of choosing the lotus feet of the Lord. So how do we handle when we see a fault in somebody, or we're repelled by somebody, or we feel criticized, or their behavior doesn't match with our own behavior? Does anybody have any tips in terms of how you deal with situations when you're triggered? How do you do that, sir? Yes. Absolutely. And how would you be merciful? Sure. Is there anybody here in the room who feels that they haven't forgiven one person in their life? Is there anyone? Thank you. Thank you for your honesty. Well, I'll leave you with that thought anyway, because it's very unlikely, if we really dig deep down, that there isn't one person in our life that who we think, you know, I need to work on some forgiveness here. So what I would say to you is that when we're repelled, let's not be defensive. Let's just take a breath, reflect for a moment, and then think, okay, how is it that this person has behaved in this manner? So for me, recently I was in a board meeting, and somebody was just very defensive, very frustrated. And, you know, the mind goes, oh, that's so rude. This shouldn't be happening. You know, it's so unprofessional. The mind starts to chatter. And then at one point I had to sort of stop. That's my story. You know, I'm seeing the fault in this person. What can I do to really appreciate what they're saying? And that is just to stop and listen. What is that person really trying to say? And then to actually think back, when did I do that? And I could think back when I was, you know, years ago, when I'd be really defensive, or if somebody said, you didn't do that right, or I'd be so frustrated because other people's values didn't align with mine. Especially when you're working with other people, or you're in a team, it's always most challenging. So I would say humbly that whenever a difficult situation arises and you're being triggered, to go within your own heart and say, okay, when did I manifest that behavior? The other thing is to quietly say, I'm so sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. And what we're saying is to the person who we did that to, because often in Srimad Bhagavatam it says that when a difficult situation happens or we're triggered by somebody, it's really a direct reflection of the anarthas within our own heart. If we don't work like this, ladies and gentlemen, the chances are we can become bitter and not realize it. On a superficial level, we'll say, right, I'm calm, I'm fine, I'm all right, I'm forgiven, it's okay. I'll be kind, I'll be merciful, I'll be tolerant. But actually, deep down, we've held on, we've locked into this anger. So renunciation isn't enough. Our attitude towards surrender and mercy is absolutely critical. Just to conclude, but the final words, where there's fear, there is no love. And where there is love, there is no fear. So what kind of love am I talking about? The love that I'm talking about isn't lusty. It isn't the kind of love that, you know, let's have a business. You know, if I love you, you'll love me back. Or if I do nice things for you, you'll like me, you'll appreciate me, you'll tell me I'm worthy. It's not that exchangeable kind of love. The love that we must cultivate is a loving heart, knowing who what our constitutional position is, giving and serving because we want to, unconditionally. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had that for us. Sri Advaita Acharya had that for us. Where would we be without the Krishna consciousness movement? So I suppose before I finish this class, I would say to you that when you go out today, just think about your own challenges. When something happens to you, go within first and say, what is it about this experience? What is it that I have to learn from? Remember, ask for silently in your heart, ask for forgiveness and move on. So it's 25 past, and are there any questions or comments?